Hello, this is your Polycast for Friday, June 17th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, a longtime DFL insider pleads guilty to charges of fraud and theft, and thousands listen to evangelical preacher Franklin Graham. Wages are rising in Minnesota because of the tight job market, Martin Moylan reports.
The state's unemployment rate held steady at 3.8% in May. Minnesota employers cut an estimated 1,900 jobs, but over the past year, they've added nearly 28,000 positions. Minnesota Department of Employment and Economic Development economist Steve Hines says wages are rising as the state's labor market tightens.
Private sector average wage rates rose to $27.07 in May. That's a full 5% higher than a year ago.
Hind expects job growth will be increasingly impaired by a limited supply of workers. Minnesota already leads the country in the percentage of adults working or looking for work, and baby boomers are retiring faster than they're replaced. Martin Moylan, Minnesota Public Radio News.
A former nonprofit executive with extensive DFL political connections has admitted to using taxpayer money for a personal car, exotic trips, and perks for friends and relatives. Bill Davis admitted in court yesterday that he broke federal laws by treating Community Action of Minneapolis as a personal piggy bank. His guilty plea heads off a trial that was supposed to start next week. Brian Baxt has more.
16 times Davis said guilty, Your Honor, in a federal courtroom. That's one for each count of fraud, theft, and conspiracy he was indicted on last year. He acknowledged misusing taxpayer money that was supposed to help low-income Minneapolis residents with heating costs, career assistance, and other vital services. Under oath for 90 minutes, Davis was forced to recount how he dipped into the Community Action of Minneapolis accounts for personal benefit and then deceived its governing board about the expenses. The guilty plea was a reversal for a man who once professed he would be vindicated. Recording wasn't allowed in the courtroom, but Davis attorney Susan Gertner spoke for him outside court.
Mr. Davis decided that he would and should take responsibility for mistakes he made. He has done so with a heavy heart. He is very sorry for the conduct that you heard about in the courtroom today.
The problems at Community Action became public as part of a state audit critical of the organization's spending and oversight. State agencies moved to cut off public funding before the organization was raided and shut down. In court, Davis spoke matter-of-factly about his crimes. He admitted to using Community Action dollars to buy and outfit a car, to take a trip to the Bahamas with his girlfriend, and to attend a Democratic Party function in Puerto Rico. He also falsely claimed to be married to get health insurance through the agency for his then-fiancée. Davis has been a longtime DFL party insider, and among more transgressions, court papers list the use of Community Action funds to attend the Democratic National Convention and one of President Barack Obama's inaugurations. Investigators have said Davis may have taken upwards of $350,000 over the years for personal use, but auditors documented even more misspending at the agency overall. A sentencing date hasn't been set, and there was no deal struck ahead of time between Davis and federal prosecutors. The 65-year-old faces the possibility of decades in prison and steep fines. The federal judge told Davis he hasn't decided on a punishment, but he warned Davis, quote, "You're stuck with your guilty plea no matter what sentence you get." When that sentencing happens, Gertner says she'll seek leniency.
My goal at sentencing is to make clear to the judge that these acts of using some CAM funds for personal expenses do not define Bill Davis.
Davis will remain free until sentencing. The only hesitation by Davis came when he was questioned about payments made to his son through an ice cream parlor run with funds from the nonprofit. Jordan Davis had a managerial role for a time, but stepped away to become a Minneapolis police officer. But prosecutors say the younger Davis continued to receive payments, $140,000 over 4 years, as a consultant to the shop, though the extent of his actual work is in dispute. He also faces charges related to those payments, including conspiracy with his father. Bill Davis said it was his idea to keep paying Jordan. He said there may have been a conversation between the two about the arrangement, but they didn't talk much about it. Jordan Davis has pleaded not guilty, and his attorney said he believes his case is now stronger. Fred Bruno is that attorney, and he took copious notes as Bill Davis was on the stand.
No, if anything, we feel more confident now that based on the testimony that we heard today in court.
What part made you more confident?
I don't want to get into that.
The trial for Jordan Davis is set to start on Wednesday in Minneapolis. Brian Baxt, Minnesota Public Radio News.
More than 2,000 people packed the lawn at the state capitol in St. Paul yesterday to hear Franklin Graham. The evangelical leader and son of Billy Graham is going to all 50 state capitals to encourage Christians to vote. Peter Cox has more.
Franklin Graham's message was clear on a few things.
People said, Franklin, are you running for office? No. But I am running a campaign, and it's a campaign for God, and to put God back into the political picture of the United States of America.
For 30 minutes, Graham urged the crowd to vote. He also encouraged them to run for office, especially school boards. As for the tumultuous presidential contest, Graham did not endorse any candidates.
I have absolutely no hope in the Democratic Party, okay? Zero. Now, before you Republicans start high-fiving each other, listen to me. For you Republicans, let me say, I got a word for you. I have zero hope in the Republican Party, all right? Zero. You go to the polls to vote. In some cases, you might have to hold your nose. But you want to vote for the candidates, even if it's not clear, for the candidate that you think will at least listen to what the Christians have to say.
Exit polls in 2012 showed about 80% of evangelicals voted for Mitt Romney for president. How many will support Donald Trump is not clear, according to Dan Hoffrening. Hoffrening, a political science professor at St. Olaf College, says Trump's divorces and controversial stances might push some away. But that's not the only reason they're voting.
I think evangelicals do have some pragmatism, and I think Donald Trump is promising to appoint pro-life judges, and I think that will be enough to motivate a lot of evangelicals.
Still, Hoffrening says, Trump isn't exactly the candidate most church-going evangelicals want in office.
I think it might be muted a bit, and I think Trump is just not enough of a fellow traveler among evangelicals. You know, he himself is a mainline Protestant, apparently is not active in a particular local congregation. He'll get some votes. He'll probably win evangelicals, but I think the big question will be turnout.
That turnout could come from people like Lloyd Johnson, who came to today's rally on one of three buses commissioned by his church. Johnson was pleased that Graham didn't come out and say who to vote for, but acknowledged that Trump will probably earn his vote. When asked if that means Trump is the candidate who would lead on those issues, Johnson wasn't exactly enthusiastic.
He will be the candidate, and he's willing to talk about Christian things. The Democratic candidates don't even want to talk about it. He's the better of the two.
But Michelle Seehafer of Medina has reservations about the national race.
I'm just really interested in this year's election. I really like the message about just getting involved on your local level.
And there will be a lot of local races to watch, beginning with all 201 Minnesota legislative seats that are on the ballot. Covering politics, I'm Peter Cox, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Fixing global climate change might call for global action, but there are a lot of efforts going on in places you wouldn't necessarily look. As Elizabeth Dunbar reports, there are countless examples in cities across Minnesota.
Because when things happen at home.
Burnsville Mayor Elizabeth Kautz was among those speaking at the Minnesota League of Cities annual conference in St. Paul this week. Burnsville and five other cities have reached the highest level of environmental stewardship in the state Green Step Cities program, which began in 2010 to recognize sustainability efforts. Kautz, who has attended global climate talks, says cities are moving forward on climate change much faster than nations. She recalls the disappointment everyone felt in 2009 in Copenhagen when world leaders failed to reach any kind of agreement to address climate change.
So here we are. Well, nothing happened in Denmark, but something happened with cities. Cities were making a difference. Cities had plans. And cities were working those plans And we continue to do that.
More than 100 cities representing 40% of Minnesota's population are now part of the Green Step program, which recently added a category for cities that are finding ways to be more resilient in the face of climate change. It's not just the well-off suburbs participating in the program. Much smaller cities all over the state are also making sustainability a priority. Hutchinson, a city of roughly 14,000 located about 60 miles west of the Twin Cities, has reached the same level in the Green Step Cities program as Burnsville. Hutchinson's environmental manager, John Paulson, drove me around earlier this spring to see some examples of what city officials are doing.
One we'll take a quick drive by is our composting facility.
Oh.
So we have source-separated compost with all of our residential properties. Yep, so we have a green container, in essence, that you can put leaves and grass clippings in, but you can also put food scraps.
Perhaps even more surprising, they've offered this composting program for residents since 2003. Meanwhile, Minneapolis is still distributing carts for its curbside organics program. Paulson had so many things on the list of city sustainability projects that he had to pick and choose what to show off. One of the city's latest projects was to install a solar array right next to the wastewater treatment plant to offset some of the electricity the energy hog uses each day.
Okay, and we're standing on top of what?
A landfill, closed landfill. It's been closed for about the last 35 years.
Building anything on a landfill is expensive. You have to ensure any structures won't disturb hazardous waste that may be lurking. So Hutchinson was using the land for something else.
As you see, it's mostly gravel out here. They do fire truck turning drills and different types of vehicle training out here. But otherwise, it's a blighted property as far as what you can and can't do with it.
The city got help from Xcel Energy to build the solar array, which produces on average 12% of the power needed to run the treatment plant.
They're quiet. There's not a lot of maintenance associated with them. During some of the snowfalls that we had over the course of the winter, if the conditions were right, if we got a 4 or 6 inch snowfall, by the end of the day, these panels were shed. All the snow had just sloughed off. We didn't have to broom them off or rake them or anything along those lines.
2 hours northwest of Hutchinson, Morris City Manager Blaine Hill sits in a windowless office in City Hall, which once housed a gas company.
So we moved into it, so we recycled it into a City Hall, and it's functional.
Morris hasn't filled out the paperwork to become an official Green Step City, but there are plenty of sustainability projects, from LED lighting to stormwater management, that Hill says have ultimately saved the city money. He says they're now looking into adding solar.
If it makes sense to invest money to save money and then be sustainable and be green, then we'll do that.
Meanwhile, Hill and other representatives from Morris hope to get even more ideas when they visit North Rhine-Westphalia in Germany next month as part of a climate smart exchange program between Minnesota and Germany. Reporting on the environment, Elizabeth Dunbar, Minnesota Public Radio News.
And that's your Polycast for this Friday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. Have a great weekend, and I'll see you again here next week.